This is the voice of the Trumpet Magazine. News, economy, politics, trends, discovery, health, family, the Bible, the future. This is Trumpet Hour, the week in review.
Welcome to the Trumpet's weekly review of all the important news. I'm Joel Hilliker, and with me is our panel. Here in the studio, we have Jeremiah Jacques.
Hello there.
And Andrew Miller.
Hello.
From our office in Britain, we have Richard Palmer.
Good afternoon.
And from our office in Jerusalem, Brent Nachtigall.
Hi.
America's retreat and the Taliban's takeover of Afghanistan has caused an immediate crisis as the U.S. pleads for mercy from a terrorist group to allow us to evacuate tens of thousands of our own citizens from their country, to say nothing of the tens of thousands of Afghani people who are likely on the Taliban's hit list and the millions of Afghani people who are suddenly living under Sharia law at gunpoint. But however this crisis plays out in the short term, what has just happened in Afghanistan is a historic event, one that will have major effects globally that reverberate for years to come. On today's show, we're going to explore several of those longer-term ramifications that are already becoming evident. What happens when a small Islamo-fascist regime is able to drive a mighty military out of their country and take over billions of dollars in armaments in the process? What happens when the world's preeminent power proves itself so weak and unreliable and broken in will? How do America's allies respond? And what do America's enemies do? How does this change the balance of power in the world? Well, we'll look at these questions as usual, guided by the prophecies of the Bible, which really give us tremendous insight into how we can expect this to unfold. We're going to start by talking about the effect on the immediate region, where you have this new extremist Islamic regime controlling a strategically important country. What does this mean for Iran and for the forces of radical Islam? For some answers, we'll turn to Brent Nachtigall.
Yeah, this is a really, really critical question that you're not going to see too many answers in the mainstream media regarding this being a positive move for Iran, that is a Taliban takeover of Afghanistan. It is true that Iran and the Taliban have been at war numerous times around the time that the United States was going into Afghanistan. You even had Qasem Soleimani offering help to the United States to take out the Taliban in 2002 and 2003. And a lot of the mainstream media reporting that Iran is extremely worried now that the Taliban is back in control, because the Taliban is Sunni and they are Shia, and so this is the age-old rivalry that's going to continue. However, there was one article that came out today from a really respected reporter that's done a lot of reporting inside Afghanistan, Iraq, and Iran over the past 10 years. And her article really did shine a light on the fact that Iran, for the past, let's say, 5 or 10 years, has been very close to the Taliban, has been actually helping out the Taliban, training Talibani fighters in northern Iran. She gives a number of examples to show that even the events in July that precipitated the American withdrawal, they were done. What the Taliban advance was done in cahoots with Iran, with an Iranian go-ahead. There was an official Iranian delegation that was sent to Iran that had many meetings back in the early part of July. This was just before the Taliban took over a couple of the critical crossing points, transit points between Iran and Afghanistan. And what she says and what she notes was that these border crossings, that when it happened, the locals reported that the Iranian officials welcomed the Taliban to take over this border crossing between the two countries. Then she says on August 6th, it seemed that the capital of Nimroz province in western Afghanistan was about to fall, and many of those afraid from the Taliban rushed towards the border, towards the Iran. Iranian officials instead reportedly refused entry to most of those fleeing. You would think that they would take them in, because here you have historic enemies, but it's just not the case. And she lays out just numerous examples of the past 5 years where Iran's relationship with the Taliban has been close, even to the point of jeopardizing and blowing up the talks that the Trump administration had with the Taliban, the peace talks back in 2020. The Trump administration was trying to find a way out of Afghanistan, trying to negotiate with the Taliban. Those talks were blown up because of Iranian interference, basically saying to the Taliban, you don't have to do it, just wait. Just wait, the Trump administration will be gone, and then you'll get the country for yourself without any of these heavy strings attached that the Trump administration is trying to put on you. And so I think this is a refreshing look at the situation, to not see Iran and the Taliban as historic enemies, which they have been 20 years ago, but the Taliban of today is actually quite open to having a very close relationship with Iran. They even have Shia elements inside the Taliban, not just Sunni fighters. They have Shia divisions. You also had one more example I'll give is the Ayatollahs in Iran back in July. A couple of the newspapers attached to the regime in Iran, they were starting to put out a statement saying that you should not criticize the Taliban anymore. That was actually the Ministry of Iran's cultural services. You should not criticize the Taliban. The Taliban are like us. They want an Islamic law to govern Afghanistan just like it governs Iran. And so you see numerous examples, again, of how these relationships are close. One more thing is the weapons that are now falling, American-made weapons that are now falling into the hands of the Taliban. Some of those have already been seen, Humvees, inside Iranian territory just over the border from Afghanistan. So they're taken over by the Taliban, and some of them are already being sent to Iran.
Looking at this from the standpoint of Bible prophecy, Afghanistan, as dangerous as it looks, and even the mainstream media kind of wants to paint this as something that Iran is really concerned about, that Iran is worried that the Taliban has taken over too much power now. There's nothing in Bible prophecy that talks about Afghanistan being a central locus of political power in the Middle East. It all points to Iran, 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 and the fact that Iran would find a way to take strategic advantage of this development shouldn't surprise us.
Yeah, not at all. The Bible talks about how there is going to be two major world powers that face off. One of them is called, this is in the book of Daniel, at least that precipitates the final war. The book of Daniel talks about how there's the king of the south and the king of the north. The king of the north is a united Europe led by Germany, and they face a frontal assault by the king of the south, which Mr. Flory has talked about being radical Islam led by Iran ever since 1993. And this is an Islamic power that pushes at the king of the north in very provocative ways. Obviously, that's Iran. But you don't get a sense in prophecy that Iran is going to have to be dueling it out with some other radicals. All the radicals, such as the Taliban, come underneath the umbrella of Iran's leadership as the king of the south. And especially as Bible prophecy shows that Iran is going to push westward into the Red Sea region and even into the southern Mediterranean, it makes sense for Iran to really consider shoring up its eastern flank before it does that. And so Bible prophecy indicates that there is not going to be Iran is not going to have a fight against the Taliban directly preceding its fight against the European powers. It makes sense that they would join forces, and especially also when you consider the amount of armaments that are now going to come into this radical Islamic force again, led by Iran, if the Taliban then joins up or at least works together with them. It's really hard actually to get stories on this. There have been a couple of assassinations in early August against journalists and or Afghani officials that have been talking to journalists about Iran's influence in the Taliban takeover, which is just scary to think about. This is not something that they want to get out. The foreign policy of the Biden administration in the Middle East has been to reassert radical Islam led by Iran. and support that, but not give the impression that it's supporting that. And so it doesn't want to blow the cover that this is going to be good for Iran, or that Afghanistan's armaments or the U.S. armaments going to fall into Iranian hands. But looking at it going forward in terms of biblical prophecy, we know that Iran is going to be strengthened by this action. As you wrote back in 2001, radical Islam, the terrorist snake of the Middle East, is not going to be impacted by the American invasion of Iraq. In fact, it's going to emerge stronger. The head of the snake will emerge stronger, and that's what we're seeing here in terms of armaments, and then in terms of the relationship that happens going forward between these two nations. There's a lot of raw mineral wealth that Afghanistan has massive opioid trade, the largest opioid trade still right now. I think 75% of opioids of the world's use come out of Afghanistan. What Taliban now has a hold of that. And that is going to fund terror. It's not going to fund terror against Iran. It's going to fund terror underneath the umbrella of what Iran is already doing.
Well, if you have not been listening to The Trumpet Daily this week from Stephen Fleury, I really encourage you to listen. He's been covering this story quite extensively and linking it to what is really arguably the most important angle of this whole story, and that is the influence of Barack Obama on this whole situation. Brent alluded to the pro-Iranian policy coming out of the Biden White House, and you can look at how Iran may profit from this. Just the facts themselves speak very loudly, but when you see the when you look at the spiritual ramifications of that, or the spiritual dimension to this, where there's actually a deliberately pro-Iranian policy, that there could have actually been intent to benefit Iran. Stephen Fleury has been getting into some of those points, and it takes some time and it takes some study to understand that more than we can cover on this program, but definitely worth looking into. And I would really encourage you to pay attention to what he has been saying on The Trumpet Daily this past week, even to listen to those programs from the last few days. Outstanding stuff that really does spring right from our understanding of Bible prophecy. Thank you very much for that, Brent. We're going to look now at Europe, where America's NATO allies say they were blindsided and they're appalled by the messiness of America's withdrawal from Afghanistan. What do these events mean for that alliance and for Europe going forward? To talk about this, we'll go to Richard Palmer.
Yes, many in Europe, especially within Germany, feel betrayed and, like you said, appalled by what has happened. I think the real feeling in Germany is you know, this was their longest and costliest military intervention after World War II, or since World War II. You've had 60 German soldiers die in Afghanistan. Going into Afghanistan was a big deal for them. And the feeling, at least in the press, is kind of very much, well, we stuck our necks out because, America, you asked us for help, and we made real sacrifices, only for the U.S. under President Biden to drop everything and walk away. Politico writes, across Europe, officials have reacted with a mix of disbelief and a sense of betrayal. Even those who cheered Biden's election and believed he could ease the recent tensions in transatlantic relationship said they regard the withdrawal from Afghanistan as nothing short of a mistake of historic magnitude. The chancellor candidate, Armin Laschet, who's wanting to replace Angela Merkel, he called it the biggest fiasco since the founding of NATO, you know, the biggest disaster in NATO's history, basically. And you know, this has been mirrored by quite a few other people. Norbert Rödingen, the chairman of the Foreign Relationship Committee in the German Parliament, talked about how it does fundamental damage to the political and moral credibility of the West. The chairman of a association of former German soldiers talked about just how angry he kind of felt. And many of these soldiers feel. He said that the situation was shameful, and he said that veterans would be enormously furious with what has happened. So, and quite a strong reaction from Europe. This is a Europe that really hated Donald Trump in a lot of ways, and were very enthusiastic about Joe Biden, and they've just been looking on at what has happened aghast.
The mess unfolding in Afghanistan, in a lot of ways, it affects Europe far more than it does the United States, just in the immediate terms, because you've got all of these Afghanis that are looking for somewhere to flee to. Obviously, Afghanistan's neighbors are going to be bracing themselves for some kind of migration crisis, but Europe has to be up in arms about this, considering what all has unfolded over the last several years there.
Yeah, I mean, in some ways, Afghanistan's neighbors are already in a migration crisis. And there are some recent figures from the UN that were showing you having 20 to 30,000 Afghans pouring out of the country per week before everything that we've seen going on in the last couple of weeks. And obviously, with some of those distressing scenes at the airports, you know that the border situation and those pouring across the border will have gotten even bigger. Just in the past 10 years, already there are 600,000 Afghans that have moved into Turkey. You've got over 3 million Syrian refugees that are already in Turkey. So, yeah, they're experiencing this already. And they are bracing for much, much more. And you saw this exactly. I mean, you saw this from Emmanuel Macron, the French president, right on Monday. He was coming out and saying, we must anticipate and protect ourselves against significant irregular migratory flows that would endanger the migrants and risk encouraging trafficking of all kinds. I mean, this is the dust hadn't really even settled on some of this news coming out of Afghanistan. By Monday, we'd been shocked. We were still getting a clear picture of what was going on. And Europe is already starting to say, uh-oh, we need to watch out for migrants. And Turkey is worried. Erdogan has said, well, we're not going to be a parking lot for migrants indefinitely. You can't just palm all of your problems off on us. But this is something that the European powers are incredibly concerned about. And this is playing, Armin Laschet has had to talk about this for the German elections. And the fact that you had the migrant crisis last time in Syria caused a whole lot of problems has meant this is a much more contentious issue. So, yeah, Europe knows that they're going to be directly affected by that. And then you've got terrorism and everything that can go with that, too. If Afghanistan goes back to being just this lawless zone, and we've talked before about how you've got there are a whole number of terrorist groups that could very easily and very quickly take advantage of Afghanistan falling apart. America could well pay the price for that, but Europe knows they're going to pay the price for that too. And they've seen some of the biggest terrorist attacks in the last 5-10 years against the West have been in European cities, especially France. So they know that they will be directly affected by what is happening in Afghanistan.
This morning's Trumpet Brief pointed to an article that we have in our new Trumpet print edition by Josue Michels, Germany Transformed by Crises, an excellent article that gives the overview of how much crises in recent years have transformed the whole picture in Europe. And you're talking about a crisis that really could exacerbate and accelerate some of those transformations that are taking place there. One of them you hear being spoken of quite a bit by European leaders in the wake of America's retreat from Afghanistan is Europe says, we can't rely on America anymore. We've got to step up and to be more independent militarily.
That's right. That is a big thing that's emerging from this already. Politico, they wrote this week, at a time when some European leaders, including French President Emmanuel Macron, have been pushing for the bloc to pursue a security policy less dependent than America, Afghanistan is bound to be used as evidence for why strategic autonomy is necessary. And strategic autonomy is a way of saying, with a lot of dense syllables, our own powerful military, the ability to wage wars independent of the United States. Europe wants to be able to really build that capability so that they're not dependent on America. And you can see why now, where their security is going to be directly affected by this. And I think that is going to be one of the big long-term turnarounds from this. And not just you know, not just in terms of, well, we need to protect ourselves against what's happening in Afghanistan. You know, I think Jeremiah might get into some of this soon, but so much of the security of a lot of powers in the world relies on the word of the United States. You know, Taiwan is not part of China right now because of the word of the United States, because America, maybe they haven't said it in so many words, but there's an indication, you invade Taiwan and we will fight you. For NATO, that is black and white. There's a declaration to Russia as part of NATO. You invade Estonia and we will fight you. You will be going to war with the United States. Afghanistan has fundamentally questioned the credibility of those kind of promises. These promises that really, you know, Taiwanese security relies upon, South Korean security relies upon, but Europe's security relies upon as well. And they know they can't trust that anymore. And so it's not just about, well, we've got to protect ourselves from the fallout from Afghanistan. Europe has got to be thinking, we need to be able to protect ourselves against Russia. We need to be able to go toe-to-toe against Russia. And the potential for Europe to do that is already there. You know, if Germany spends 2% of their GDP, their economy, on their military, they'll be outspending Russia. But there's some things that they need to do to make that happen. They need to work together with their military much more. They need to get it so that they can, you know, that European, that Germans and French, you know, they're forming a pan-European military. You can really see all of that dramatically accelerating. And so that's why you see, you look at what's happening in Afghanistan from a European perspective, and it ties into so many of these Bible prophecies that we talk about regularly on this show. We talk about a Europe that comes together as a 10-nation superpower that has great strategic autonomy, you know, that is able to wage war in an incredible way without relying upon the United States. We talk about these prophecies about this clash in Daniel 11 between the king of the north and the king of the south. And you see that building. We quoted quite a few times from the article you wrote 20 years ago, saying that it's not going to be America that fundamentally deals with the problem of radical Islam and that takes out the head of the snake. It's going to be Europe. You can really see that accelerating. And I think this week we've seen a lot of distressing images from Afghanistan. I think for me, especially seeing some of those girls outside of the Afghan airport just crying for American soldiers to come help them. But this is where the hope is in this solution in this week as well. There have been so many concrete examples of proof of Bible prophecy. You know, this is moving Bible prophecy forwards in so many ways. And so that has Bible prophecy is all about an inspiring conclusion, and that God is behind and has a plan for all of this that is happening. But just in terms of some of those immediate prophecies, we have our trumpet brief last night, Germany betrayed in Afghanistan fiasco, that you can read if you'd like more information.
Very good. Very well said. Germany betrayed in Afghan fiasco. We'll link to that in the show notes, as well as that other article by Josue Michels, Germany Transformed by Crises. And that really does lead right into our next segment here, to Asia, specifically Russia and China, who really are much more openly adversarial about the United States. They're gloating about America's collapse in Afghanistan, and they've really positioned themselves well to benefit from the aftermath. For this, we'll go to Jeremiah Jacques.
Yeah, there's been really a complex mix of responses from Russia and China about this U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan. On one hand, it worries both of them because it creates instability right in their neighborhood. You know, for the U.S., this is 8,000 miles away, but for Russia and China, it's an incredibly sensitive area. We talked last week about how Russia has several important allies, former Soviet states that border Afghanistan, and we talked about how China has some of its most important Belt and Road infrastructure running right through there, especially in Pakistan with the China-Pakistan Economic Corridor. So on one hand, China and Russia are troubled by the U.S.'s departure, and they're not anxious to go in there and take America's place militarily because, you know, Afghanistan is seen as an almost inevitable quagmire. They're not eager to become the next country to spend untold billions of dollars to attempt to bring order to Afghanistan's chaos with military methods. But there have been signs that both Russia and China are doing all they can politically and diplomatically to take advantage of this situation. Back in 2003, Russia actually followed the U.S.'s lead and declared the Taliban a terrorist organization. But now, even though that designation still stands, and even though it's illegal for any Russian to have dealings with a Taliban member, in recent years, Russia has been cultivating ties with the Taliban and even hosting Taliban members for various multilateral and bilateral meetings. And this is now paying big dividends for Russia, because while the United States and many other countries have evacuated their embassies, Russia has not. It still has its Kabul embassy going strong. So that indicates a significant agreement that the Taliban has made with Russia. And then with China, we've seen similar moves lately, with the Chinese reaching out to the Taliban and just building a partnership with them, mostly intended to prevent extremism from spilling into China and from threatening Chinese infrastructure in the area. And China is one of the other few nations that has not shuttered its embassy in Kabul. So again, that's a sign of significant partnership that's developed there. So it is a complex situation for Russia and China, but as a result of this U.S. withdrawal, they are both becoming more influential in Afghanistan, and they stand to become far more influential in the broader Central Asian region.
So let's just go back to what Richard was talking about when you see just how much of a hit America's reputation has taken, that allies of America the world over have to look at this and say, okay, well, if we can't trust America to uphold its security guarantees in that part of the world, what's to say that they would be able to uphold them in Taiwan? What about Ukraine? Other areas where America's reputation was already shaky, but how do Russia and China view this on that front?
Yes, Russia and China are just overjoyed about how much of a humiliation this is for the U.S. This is something that loudly calls American reliability into question. And of course, we know that, as you said in the introduction to this segment, Russia and China are two of the main players that are working toward an end to America's global dominance. So they're just, you know, rejoicing about how much this exposes the U.S.'s weakness. Chinese journalists and officials have been saying that this withdrawal means America's security guarantees are not really guarantees. And of course, they point especially to Taiwan, and they're trying to convince the Taiwanese people, for years we've not invaded because of America's backing and promises that they would come to your aid. But now those promises mean nothing. They don't have your back. They're utterly unreliable. And so I think that China will actually be more likely to make a move on Taiwan, because now they understand that under Biden, it's very likely that the U.S. would not intervene. And then out of Russia, we're hearing a similar case made with Ukraine. You know, Ukraine is a partner nation of the U.S., and that partnership has deterred Russia from a whole-scale invasion. But now Russians are saying, wait a minute, look at Afghanistan. So, you know, if America were to threaten to push back against Russia's absorption of more former Soviet territory, whether that's in Ukraine or elsewhere, Russia, I think, will not really take those threats seriously because of what they've just seen in Afghanistan. But there's a quote by CEPA this week, and I think it summed it up really powerfully. It says, adversaries will be reinforced in their confidence that the U.S. does not have the will to win. America may have the resources, but it lacks the determination and stamina to achieve an outcome. To beat America, they will conclude, you just have to wait.
Right.
So, you know, ultimately, this looks like it could just really embolden both Russia and China and make the world a more dangerous place.
That really leads right into what we would expect from prophecy, the fact that America's influence on the world is waning and other powers are going to gleefully rush in to fill that vacuum. That's what the Bible says will happen.
Yes, it does. Yeah, for decades, we've seen American and British leadership really be a stabilizing force in the world and an advanced civilization for numerous, you know, peoples and countries around the world. But the Anglo-American era is quickly ending, as we see with this Afghanistan fiasco. And the world is now moving into a new era. And this is an era that the Bible specifically talks about. It calls it the times of the Gentiles. And Trumpet Editor-in-Chief Gerald Fleury discussed this era in our February 2020 issue. And in one part of that article, he writes, quote, when this prophecy is completely fulfilled, there will be two major powers, one revolving around Russia and China, and the other around Germany. And then skipping down a little, he writes, "These times of the Gentiles are yet to be fully realized. However, we are in the outer edges of this catastrophic storm." And then he explains that this is all leading to another world war. So, you know, that was back in early 2020 that Mr. Fleury wrote that. And I think that it's safe now, in light of this Afghanistan situation, to say that we are even deeper into the outer edges of that catastrophic storm.
"The Climax of Man's Rule Over Man" is the title of an article that Gerald Fleury has written about this very subject, and giving you prophetic understanding of what the Bible calls the times of the Gentiles. We'll link to that article in our show notes for today's program and encourage you to read that. Thank you very much, Jeremiah. One final look at the geopolitical fallout from America's retreat from Afghanistan. That is the effect that it's going to have on the alliance between America and the United Kingdom. For this, we'll go back to Richard Palmer.
Yes, we had some really interesting debates in the House of Commons this week in the UK about the Afghan situation. It's not something that immediately cropped into my mind when I saw it or were watching it all unfold. But just like in a lot of Europe, and perhaps more so than in a lot of Europe, many British leaders in the Houses of Parliament are absolutely livid with what President Biden has done. I was just going through some of the debates to try and pick out some sound bites, and I don't know whether we'll end up using that or not. But I kind of felt like I could have easily put together half an hour or more of sound bites from MPs debating, where they are very directly critical of President Biden. And it's not just from any one particular political party, all over the spectrum. But one person's speech really stood out in a whole range of ways from Parliament this week. And Melanie Phillips drew attention to this in one of her articles. It was from Tom Tugendhat. And I think it's probably one of the most eloquent speeches heard in Parliament for several years. If you're at all interested in public speaking and the art of public speaking, even from that point of view alone, it is worth looking up this 7 or 8 minute speech. But he is a war veteran. He fought in Afghanistan, and he talked about the wounds that this week had left raw and hurting, the anger, the grief, the rage that he and many others felt. But one of the core points, practical points, that he was making in this speech is that Britain needs to make some changes to its foreign policy, too. And he talked about how we need to reinvigorate our European NATO partners to make sure that we are not dependent upon a single ally, on the decision of a single leader, but that we can work together with Japan and Australia, with France and Germany, with partners large and small, and make sure that we hold the line together. He's saying, and I think there's a lot of people that agree with him, that Britain needs to look at this special relationship. We need to look at the close relationship that we have with the United States, and that actually we need to start looking for some alternatives. We need to maybe move away from the United States and look at drawing closer to Germany, to France, to Japan, to some of these other countries, so that we have other options, because the United States is simply not dependable. And this week really showed that there were reports of Boris Johnson trying for 36 hours to get Joe Biden on the phone and just not able to get a hold of him. There's reports of America just not telling Britain, when do the American soldiers plan to leave the Kabul airport? And I think there's indications that Britain has had a real trouble getting answers to that question. There's reports even of friction between some of the soldiers on the ground. It could be a real turning point potentially in Britain's relationship with America.
How is that significant prophetically, Richard?
So that is another key prophecy that we've talked about. This kind of, you have this brotherhood between Britain and America, and Winston Churchill talked about this brotherhood, and he talked about the shared history, the shared language that these countries have. But more than that, there's a dimension to that brotherhood that even he didn't see, that these are the two nations that are descended from Israel. They are descended from the biblical nations of Israel. They are They are the birthright nations. These two nations uniquely have been blessed from God. There's a fundamentally close connection there. And you see this connection has been incredibly valuable to the world. And the Bible prophesies about this connection breaking, about the friction developing from these two. And then you have prophecies that tie right in that, like Hosea chapter 5, what talks about Britain turning to basically to Assyria, to Germany, looking to Germany for help. And that's exactly what we see. And, you know, who knows, maybe when we have Donald Trump back, maybe there will be a resurgence of this relationship temporarily between Britain and America. But you see the instinct already that Britain and America, okay, well, there's some kind of friction. Well, we need to turn to Germany and France, which is exactly what is prophesied in the Bible. But Trumpet Editor-in-Chief Joe O'Flaherty had an article on this relationship in the July 2021 article. It's called The Real Rift Caused by the Royal Couple. And it's focusing on, you know, Harry and Meghan and the divide that they were causing between Britain and America. But that article just talks about how important that relationship is. And so there's real significance when you see that divide, and that whole situation between Harry and Meghan has helped with that divide. But I think what we've seen this week has widened that divide even further.
All right. Thank you very much for that, Richard. Before we leave this theme, we're going to visit Washington, where the decisions about America's withdrawal from Afghanistan were made. How could America have gotten this so wrong, and what caused this debacle? We get a clue when we look at what the military has been focusing its attention on while the Taliban have been sweeping through Afghanistan. For this story, we'll turn to Andrew Miller.
Yeah, it is amazing that the world's most powerful military could have spent $2 trillion over 20 years fighting a nation like Afghanistan and then just pull an overnight retreat like this. But yeah, you're looking at like, well, what's the America has been focusing its efforts on? And there's a lot of light that can be shed on this, that a speech that General Mark Milley gave about 2 months before the Afghan debacle, and at a speech to West Point, General Milley was defending critical race theory and specifically saying that the United States really needs to focus on like white rage, like the type of white supremacy he said happened at the January 6th protest. They've been putting all sorts of new manuals into place defending critical race theory, which is basically a Marxist theory that replaces class warfare with class conflict with race conflict. And so these new diversity manuals, they're focusing on working with your talents of a diverse workplace, including diversity in language, diversity in race, diversity in color, diversity with disabilities, ethnicities, gender, age, religion, sexual orientation, gender identity. And so you're basically looking for equal rights for the disabled in the military, which doesn't sound like an amazing way to win a war. Even before this, like one of his first speeches in office, President or Biden came out and said that the military was really focusing on making sure there were enough maternity jumpsuits for all the female soldiers in there. And you can, you just let your imagination run a little bit. You can imagine if they've got television access, which I'm sure they do, some of these. Taliban insurgents watching C-SPAN looking at America's commitment to maternity jumpsuits and transsexual soldiers and non-discriminating against the crippled and the disabled in military positions and been like, you know what, guys? I think we can take Kabul.
Right. But, yeah, just a week. It was a week before the Taliban took over Kabul that you had General Mark Milley making these comments about trying to eliminate white supremacy from the military and so on.
Right. And this is the same guy who, when they asked him, like, well, how'd the Taliban take over in 11 days? He's like, well, yeah, it's like no one could have predicted that.
Right.
And he's like, so maybe you could have predicted that if you'd focused a little bit more on Islamic extremism overseas than talking about white supremacy and those who think the election was stolen. Yeah. And so, it is just maddening. It did bring there's a quote you used in one of your recent trumpet briefs by the famous KGB defector Yuri Bezmenov, that he talks about. They said to destroy, this is like KGB theory, he's like, to destroy the house of your enemy, you don't have to physically intrude into it. It's just enough to start a fire next door, wait till the wind blows in the right direction, and then sow in some great ideas for the owners to argue about, like environmental protection, gay liberation, and the emancipation of house pets. And it does. It's really a stark painting. It's like I said, you've literally got the nation where 9/11 was planned being taken over by the same institution that let that happen, while the military's arguing about if we have enough combat positions open for transgender soldiers.
Yeah. Well, the United States has been going down this road for quite a long time, and prioritizing the diversity is our strength mantra and all that flows from that over combat readiness and the ability to actually win wars. And it seems like this crop of generals who are in charge now have bought into that kind of thinking more than any in America's history. And we're seeing very much the results of that. And this is prophesied as well, that you can see in Isaiah 3. It talks about this very thing.
Yeah, it talks about, taking away the man of war, the mighty man, the honorable man. And it's definitely when your top generals, your what the Bible would call your men of war, your mighty men of war, are more worried about soldiers' hairdos and maternity jumpsuits and transgender rights than they're worried about actually assessing whether the organization that helped plan 9/11 can take over a nation in 11 days or not, then it's fair to say that your men of war are almost gone.
Where would you send people to get a better understanding of just how prophetically significant this development is?
Yeah, well, in the show notes, we can put the article I quoted from you, the Vanishing Man of War, that goes in. It's a little bit, probably about 10 years old, I think, but it goes through those prophecies.
Yeah, before some of the most recent egregious examples of what we're talking about. This is back to when they were just prioritizing bringing women in and some of the earlier phases of that politically correct thinking that were beginning to infect the military.
Yeah, I don't think it mentions the transgender. It wasn't even an issue back then. It was more about like lowering the push-up limit so that you could get more women into it. But that article goes through that in quite a bit of detail. And then we can also put from our editor-in-chief, the Isaiah's End Time Vision booklet, which has a chapter on Isaiah 3. That goes through maybe not in quite as much detail about what's happening in the military, but giving that big overview of what Isaiah was talking about.
All right. Thank you very much for that. Andrew, you're listening to Trumpet Hour. We've got a short second half. We have a few non-Afghanistan stories, including the completion of the strategic Nord Stream 2 pipeline, a defiant announcement from Hezbollah in Lebanon, and an election controversy in Colorado that could have much bigger implications. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Trumpet Hour, the Week in Review.
The Nord Stream 2 pipeline is about to actually be completed. To learn about this, we'll go back to Jeremiah Jacques.
Yes, Deutsche Welle reported this week that after almost 10 years of construction, the Nord Stream 2 pipeline will be completed on August 23rd. So just a couple of days from now. And this is a remarkable project for a number of reasons, but it's mainly because of the power that it will give to both Russia and Germany, and in the alarming way that it binds these two together. So for Russia, the pipeline will greatly boost its power over Ukraine, Belarus, and other former Soviet nations. nations. These are countries that Russia's been working to bring more tightly into its grip. And in the past, one of the ways that Russia could apply pressure on them was by cutting off shipments of gas through older pipelines that go straight into those countries. But these older pipelines were also Russia's only way to get gas into Western Europe. So that meant that if Russia was cutting off one of these former Soviet nations, it was also forced to cut off those downstream countries, such as Germany. But with the completion of Nord Stream 2, Russia will be much better positioned to shut off gas shipments to former Soviet nations without cutting off Germany. So Russia has often weaponized its energy in the past, and now it'll be able to do that with a lot more precision. And that's why many Eastern European nations protested against building the Nord Stream pipelines. That's also why President Trump worked hard to stop the Nord Stream project. But Russia and Germany ignored those protests, and the Biden administration lifted the blocks that the Trump administration had put on it, which is what allowed us to get where we are, just a couple of days away from completion. And then Germany's power will also be boosted by this project, because once the Germans receive Russia's gas, they normally ship a lot of it on to France and other Western European countries. But if Germany had a reason to cut off a certain country from these shipments, it'll now be well positioned to do that. And that basically means that Germany will have considerably more power to dictate policy for all of Europe.
August 23rd, an interesting date for the completion.
Very interesting date. Yeah, students of history will remember that the Molotov-Ribbentrop Pact was actually signed on August 23rd back in the year 1939. Trumpet Editor-in-Chief Gerald Flurry has written about the Nord Stream pipelines. This was in our September 2018 issue, and he actually called the Nord Stream pipelines a modern Molotov-Ribbentrop deal, because just like that deal back, you know, just before World War II, this binds these two countries together in an alarming way, and it frees them both up for imperialistic exploits, really. One part of his article says, when they cooperate together, it is a signal that either or both are preparing for some kind of imperialistic exploit. This makes the Nord Stream 2 deal extremely concerning. So, you know, I think the fact that this is happening on that date, I don't know if that's just a coincidence or not, but the completion will be on that shameful anniversary. And it's certainly a worrying development, and one that we need to keep a close watch on.
Where would you send people for more information?
To that that article by Mr. Flurry. It's called Germany and Russia's Secret War Against America.
All right. We'll link to that in the show notes for the program. Thank you, Jeremiah. With Lebanon in dire straits and Hezbollah deeply unpopular, the terrorist group made a defiant announcement this week. To learn about this, we'll go back to Brent Nachtigall.
Yes, on Thursday, Hezbollah terror chief Hassan Nasrallah, he said that a tanker is going to set off from Iran containing oil or fuel to sail to Lebanon to offload its cargo there to bring in desperately needed fuel to the country. This is something that Iran has obviously done in the past to Syria, and in direct contravention of international sanctions that are on in both Syria and Iran to do such a thing. And so this was a pretty bold move. He continued his quote saying this: the vessel, from the moment it sails in the coming hours until it enters the Mediterranean waters, will be considered Lebanese territory. To the Americans and Israelis, I say it's Lebanese territory. Basically meaning that if you start attacking this vessel en route to Lebanon, then we will deem it necessary to respond back to most likely Israel, firing rockets or something like that into northern Israeli territory.
It is a bold statement. You wonder how much of this is desperation, because certainly Hezbollah is desperate right now, and how much of it is being emboldened by all of the events that we've been talking about on the program today.
Yeah, I think both of those factors are at play. There are a lot of other political leaders in Lebanon that do not want this, because it further dangers the Lebanese state from being from further sanctions as well from the United States and others. But I think what Lebanon is doing, or let's say what Hezbollah is doing through this, is making it very public to actually deter Israeli action against it. If it keeps it, if it does this and sends the tanker into Lebanese waters, Israel would be more prone to act against it, as they have done, to probably a dozen vessels like this going to Syria or Lebanon in the past couple of years that we didn't really hear much about. But now the fact that they have brought it to the attention of both the Israelis and the United States, Israel is going to have to answer to the United States if it decides to act against this tanker, which Hezbollah says is on a humanitarian mission. And we know that this current Israeli government has predicated all of its actions against against Iranian proxies with the with direct consultation with the United States. Basically, the United States has to sign off on Israeli action against Iran. And so this is a really a pretty smart route move by Nasrallah in many ways, to really try and pressure Israel to not act, because they'll probably have to answer to the Americans if they do so. America, of course, is largely now, this administration, as we covered in the first half, is largely a pro-Iranian power. And it's making it more difficult for Israel to fight against Iranian proxies, be it Hamas or Hezbollah. And Hezbollah is really making the most of that.
Where would you send people for more information and just to understand what's happening here prophetically, Brent?
Yeah, I wrote an article back in March entitled Wall Street Journal Joins Propaganda Media in Gunning for Israel. It's basically about a report in the Wall Street Journal that was from the U.S. intelligence agency, a leak, that said that Israel has been attacking Iranian ships on these type of missions. And my point in that article was to show how by leaking this to the media, the United States is trying to make it more difficult for Israel to conceal its attacks, and thus legitimizing Iranian responses against Israel, painting Israel and Iran as equal players of equal morality in this shadow war. And I think what you see with Nasrallah in this is he's just laying down the gauntlet to Israel again, acting on the fact that he knows that the United States is on Iran's side in terms of this shadow war at sea.
All right. Thank you very much for that, Brent. We'll finish with a development in the investigation into election fraud in the United States, a case in Colorado that could have much larger implications. For this, we'll turn to Andrew Miller.
Yeah, the election controversy in Colorado's Mesa County is escalating. The FBI announced on Tuesday that it's going to be conducting an investigation into an alleged security breach of election equipment at the Mesa County Clerk's Office. It's been alleged that that Tina Peters, who works for the Mesa County Clerk's Office and was an attendant at Mike Lindell's recent cyber symposium, and two other people had broke into the office after hours and copied two hard drives off the computers there and posted them online. Accusations against the people who did it haven't been proven yet, and I think there might be some contestation about that. That's why the FBI is looking into it. But it is definitely shedding a spotlight on this, because regardless of whether or not it was legal for those hard drives to be leaked online, it probably wasn't. The content of them is really fascinating. We've mentioned this, I think, briefly on this program a couple weeks back, about how those hard drives, they made it into the hands of Ron Watkins, who's a well-known figure in the QAnon movement, and he had got in contact with Gateway Pundit and posted some of this information, basically looking at before and after screenshots of some of these computer systems, before and after the election, and the changes that were made in some of the passwords and other things that pretty much prove that when Dominion voting machines said that their systems couldn't be accessed by the internet during the election, they were lying. That was a big part of Dominion's defense, is they're like, our voting machines just count votes during the election. They're collected later and delivered to the proper authorities. We can't mess with it remotely while the election's ongoing. But these hard drive screenshots pretty much show that they not only did the machines have that capacity, but it looks like there was some interaction with these machines being happened remotely during the election. And so the fact that the FBI is trying to get these people for leaking this illegally, but I mean, it also is shining a national spotlight that that Dominion's defense doesn't necessarily hold water. And so I'm sure we'll be seeing between the cyber symposium and then the lawsuits over the subpoenas and this FBI investigation, you're going to be seeing a lot of audits, investigations, and lawsuits concerning the legitimacy of the 2020 election in the weeks and months ahead.
I saw a poll that was talking about how many Biden voters regret their vote. And I suppose it's how many actual Biden voters they found might be a bit suspicious, considering how much fraud there was in that election. But this whole story has been completely subsumed by everything that is taking place in Afghanistan. And yet, as you said, there's a lot going on still behind the scenes and probably outside the headlines of most mainstream publications that still could have significant impact on American governance going ahead.
Yeah, they're getting closer and closer every day. You're getting more and more details, a clearer and clearer picture of exactly how the election was stolen. Like I said, there's enough statistical anomalies and other things like that it's pretty clear that it was stolen. Now exactly like which machines and from what locations they used to do it, there's some open questions there. But they're slowly but surely getting more and more answers every day.
Well, we will link to our editor-in-chief's article, What Will Happen After Trump Regains Power, in the show notes, just to understand why Bible prophecy actually informs us what is going to be happening in the time ahead with respect to that election 2020. Thank you very much, Andrew. I'm Joel Hilliker, and that's it for today's Trumpet Hour. Email us your thoughts on the program to letters@thetrumpet.com. And thanks to these gentlemen, Jeremiah Jacques, Andrew Miller, Richard Palmer, and Brent Noctegal. Thanks to Parker Campbell for engineering and production. I'll leave you with the words of G.K. Chesterton. The business of progressives is to go on making mistakes. The business of conservatives is to prevent the mistakes from being corrected. Thanks for joining us on Trumpet Hour. Until next time, keep watching your world.
You've been listening to Trumpet Hour on Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG, and online at kpcg.fm. Understand your world.